Oh, hey, it's the cup of hazelnut-flavored truck stop coffee. You're too ashamed to admit you love Allie Ward. Back with another episode of Ologies. Ooh, tiny chameleons, drooling dragons, venomous thick boys, legless lizards, and more. But first, thank yous. Thank you to everyone supporting Ologies on Patreon. Thank you to everyone who gets Ologies merch from ologiesmerch.com. Thanks to everyone keeping Ologies up in the science charts and for telling your friends and family and foes. Maybe those overlap. And thank you for leaving such nice reviews that you know that I creep on days when I'm wondering, do people like this? So to prove it, I read a fresh one. For example, Katie Derrick says, prepare to change your life. This podcast is life-changing. Did you hear me? Life-changing, all caps, they say. Start with the episode on fear and then listen to every single other one. And thank you to everyone who listens as they do field work in Alaska or do chores or paint your kids' rooms or do the dishes or go on road trips. I'm honored to be in your pocket. Okay, lizards. Serology, let's talk about it. Guess how freaking elated I was when one day I was very busy lamenting that my wonderful herpetology episode with Dr. David Steen covered too many scaly bases. And then I stumbled upon a Wikipedia page identifying herpetology subfields. My eyes landed on the most beautiful word, serology. Some angels sang, some clouds parted. Just a single tear raced down my cheek, and I looked out a window and I whispered to this guy, I fucking love lizards, man. Soros in Greek means lizards. I had just the serologist to make all of our dreams come true. I followed her on Twitter for months and months, and on Wednesdays, she posts a game called hashtag find that lizard. And these are photos from her fieldwork that you swear, zooming over all of the pixels, they gotta be a hoax. There's no lizards in there, but in fact, there is a lizard. So find that lizard made me love lizards and Wednesdays even more. So I had her over to have a real-time find that lizard session among some local grasses and cacti and also my neighbor Donna, who's awesome, and wondered why I was in my bushes.
She's a lizard scientist. We're looking for lizards. Oh, wow. Yeah, this is Erin.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
Just the madam. They always in my yard.
Really? Yeah. We were looking.
They usually perch on these rocks.
Are they? I guess they're warming themselves, right?
Yeah.
So she's like a professional lizard scientist.
Well,
and
came to the right place.
Nice. I see a beer bottle. I don't know what species of beer bottle. It might be a genus Budweiser. Species light. Oh, every once in a while, I think I see something out of the corner of my... Oh, wait,
oh,
wait, wait.
That's a lizard.
Yeah. You see it?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I thought I was hallucinating. Oh. Wow. Does it ever happen where you you don't know if you saw a lizard or if you hallucinated?
Yes.
Yeah.
All the time. Everything is a lizard.
Everything.
That bush is a lizard. That rock is a lizard. That piece of grass is a lizard. I'm just like, movement. It must be a lizard.
So we ran with it and we crouched near a cactus to watch for some tiny movements and listen for scuttly rustling. And we saw three dang lizards. And then we settled into my couch to chat about everything from geckos, anti-gravity grip to Komodo dragon mouths to Godzilla to her wildly popular Find That Lizard hashtag game on Twitter, to field season, to Gila monster sightings, close encounters with lions, balls of snoozy lizards, getting hygge as hell in a hibernaculum, to some sound advice on social anxiety and how to succeed in literally any field or ambition. So spread out on a rock, soak in the warmth of this ray of science sunshine, serologist Erin McGee. Now you are, I looked this up, you're a serologist.
Yes.
Did you know that before?
I did not.
Really?
No, no one really uses that word, but you know, I'm very happy it exists. It works. It works.
Now, when you tell people what you do, like at a dinner party, say, or someone's just introducing you, do you tell them that you're a lizard scientist?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Hopefully people are curious enough to ask you like leading questions so that you can dive in. And I mean, I would love to leave a dinner party and know more about lizards. Who wouldn't?
I mean, that's true.
Now, why lizards? Are they your favorite kind of wildlife, or did you just like
being out in nature and field work, and then you found that you started to do a lot of research there?
So I always knew that I wanted to work with animals from like birth to undergrad. I was like, I'm going to be a veterinarian. And like, you know, I was like one of those teacher's pet type of kids. But like in the second grade, this one time, this lady was like, yeah, you can't be a veterinarian. And apparently, according to my parents, I told her off.
What did you just say to me?
Because I got sent to the principal's office, and like, in my family, you don't get sent to the principal's office. You just don't do that. And so, like, they had to come get me, and I was like, listen. But then I got to undergrad, and I went and I talked to, like, some med school students, and they were like, yeah, we have friends in med school, and they're miserable. I think that the requirements of going through the process of med school are just different, where it's a lot more intense because you actually have to save these animals' lives and treat them and, you know, give them medicine, and you don't want to overdose somebody's pet.
Mm-hmm.
So
pressure's on.
Yeah.
So vets, thank you, vets.
I appreciate you.
Because, we appreciate you, know,
you. My Puka, my dog, his vet is awesome.
But you were like, maybe not for me.
Right.
At some point. When did you get to pivot a little bit?
So my freshman year of undergrad, I did this program called HCOP. That's the acronym.
Erin went to Howard University in Washington, D.C. and participated in HCOP, Health Careers Opportunity Program. And a mentor there introduced her to Dr. George Middendorf, a herpetologist who became her undergrad advisor.
And then one of my other friends was like, hey, you like animals, and you also need money to pay for this school. You should apply to the Environmental Biology Scholars Program.
She applied, and she got in and got to poke around in some different types of field work to see what floated her boat.
One guy was working with fish, and I was not really interested in fish like that. And so then I started working with lizards, and then I went out to the Chiricahua Mountains for the first time the summer after my freshman year. And I was like, wow, this is perfect. I get to be outside. I get to catch lizards. And this is like, you know, doing this work is like, it's hard, but it's not like vet school hard. So I was like, this is perfect everything. It meets all my criteria.
Erin says she realized doing field work that there are still so many questions about ecology and animals that were never answered. And that really excited her. And she graduated from Howard with a bachelor's in biology and then headed out to the University of Arizona to get her master's in wildlife conservation and management through the School of Natural Resources and the Environment. And she's now working toward her PhD in the same field. And speaking of being outstanding in the field, when you are catching lizards, walk me through what that is like in the field. Like, how early do you have to get to a field site? What is it like? Like, where do you start?
All right. So for the projects that I've been doing, I've had already, I scouted, you know, sites. And so we would start about 8 in the morning or so, because like for the most part, the lizards aren't out like super, super early. You want it to be warm by the time they get out. And normally about 8:30-ish, it's warm enough.
I love that these lizards are like, it's too early, like 8:30, 9 o'clock, you know.
And that's also perfect for me because I am not an early bird at all. So like birds are out. I was just like, listen, can't do it.
Need it.
I guess there's no like the early lizard gets the fly. You don't hear that.
Yeah. So we'll get up, have breakfast, then we go grab all of our stuff. We have to make sure that we all have our lizard poles, and everybody has to make sure that their line is good, and it's not too short, it's not too long.
Erin, by the way, has a very cool piece of equipment called a lasso, and it's essentially a little knot of silk thread, and it's on a fishing pole. She can extend it out, and then she can loop it around a lizard, and zip, she's got the lizard.
So we have like a whole fanny pack system, and so like the fanny pack has like the notebook that we take our notes in, pencils, pens, rulers, scissors, all that kind of stuff that we need, and then like we just pass off the fanny pack to the people who need them, who needs it at whatever time. And so then when you're like, you walk through however far you need to get into the site. And then once you're in the site, pole is in hand. So that way when you see a lizard, you're ready to, you know, go for it. Mm-hmm. And so then at that point, we're just walking up and down the site however many times that we've decided that we're going to walk up and down the site. Normally, it's just walk up once, walk down once, and then leave. Mm-hmm. If there are no lizards, and occasionally in some sites there have been no lizards, it's pretty quick. And then in sites where there are a lot of lizards, you know, we might spend 2-3 hours in a site catching lizards.
This is such a stupid question, but what is a lizard? I mean, we're talking a reptile.
Yes.
We're talking not a snake. It has legs, although there are legless lizards.
Yeah.
Correct. Mm-hmm. But what differentiates a lizard from, say, a snake other than legs? I feel like somewhere in between a toad and a snake lies a lizard. like in a Venn diagram of limbs and such.
I'm pretty sure it has something to do with the bones of their head shapes, mm-hmm. and their skulls. It's something to do with how their backbones and stuff
that makes
put together.
Turns out that defining a lizards isn't the easiest because there's so much variety in them. Y'all, there are lizards that have venom, that have third eye organs at the top of their heads. They have scary Shakespearean collars. There are ones that dive and eat algae in the sea. Others that walk on water. What? Like a Jesus? They can take down a water buffalo that can clone themselves. There are wall crawlers, night singers, blood shooters. Also, it's early in the episode, but I'll go there. The males have 2 dicks. Why not travel with a spare? But don't worry, female lizards are known to have 2 clitorises, and researchers don't know what they're for. But, you know, maybe they should just ask. But the book definition of a lizard is any suborder of reptiles distinguished from the snakes by a fused, inseparable lower jaw, a single temporal opening. That's a skull hole, kiddos. External ears, eyes with movable lids, and 2 pairs, total 4, well-differentiated functional limbs, which could be lacking, though, in burrowing forms. So there's your definition of a lizard. And also, yes, there are wormy-looking legless lizards. Also, I just Google image searched lizard ears because I just needed like a little dose of cute. And somehow up popped a photo of a person who had gauged ears with a live anole resting in the rubbery hammock of this person's lobe flesh. So that's enough of that. Also, some lizards like green anoles and monitor lizards and Komodo dragons, which are monitor lizards, are super smart. Researchers say maybe on par with some bird species. So does Erin find that when she's out catch and releasing them for her data?
So it depends on the lizard.
Okay.
Some lizards are smarter than other lizards.
Okay.
And it also depends on if they've been caught before.
Really?
Because then they've learned. They now know what it is. And so sometimes, like, a lizard will see you and it's just like, they're not going to bother me, or they don't see me. My camouflage is good enough. And then you can like just walk right on, like right up on them. Or like sometimes they'll see you and they'll run and then you have to run with them and you're chasing a lizard. And you know, sometimes it takes like 3 or 4 people to catch one lizard because you're just like,
Erin told me that to track them, her research team, like herpetologists all over the world, sometimes has to snip off a few toes in a certain order as a marker. So toe clipping has its critics, of course, but catching and releasing lizards to monitor them, especially with climates a-changing and water sources drying up, is important to the work that herpers are doing. And she says she takes just the minimum she needs for identification. And I did not ask what she does with the toes. I started researching to see if you can buy small bags of lizard toes. Like maybe she could put them to use and sell them to a site for witches. And then that landed me on a Wiccan page to see if they actually do use lizard toes for anything. Honestly, they didn't have anything about lizard toes. Just some helpful info on candles and herbs and crystals. Before I knew it, I was on Wiccan Living reading a really great article about gratitude that really made my day. I was like, thanks, witches. Most of you are probably vegan anyway. So yeah, if wild lizards don't respond by name, how else can you recognize them?
So I also paint mark them on their back, so I'll just give them like a little number.
How long do lizards live? Are you seeing the same ones like later on in the field season, maybe next year?
So they can live generally a little while, and it also depends on the species, but like the lizards that I'm looking at normally don't get too much older than 5 or so in the wild. Like my undergrad advisor was just like, he would see this one big male lizard year after year, just like displaying to everyone. And
hello, ladies.
One day it got swooped up by a bird.
Oh, did he see it?
Yeah.
He was there for it? Mm-hmm. That's pretty opportune, I'd have to say, like, yeah, in terms of getting some closure on where that lizard went.
Right.
You know? Oh my God, was he just like so screaming? I probably would be like, no.
He didn't go into all that detail. So you do see them year after year.
You're like, hey, what's up? It's you again.
And they like to hang out in the same areas for the most part.
So it's not like they're finding a different rock. They're like, this is my rock.
Pretty much.
You've come to my rock. Shocker. I'm here on this rock
exactly.
again. It's not like they're going to move to New Jersey out of nowhere.
And so for the most part, most of the lizards didn't move more than 5 meters. And so we would see lizards year after year after year in the same places. I look back like 5 years because my undergrad advisor George, he has been going out to the same site for, you know, like 40 years, so he had all this historical data that I could look at and grab onto.
And what do lizards usually eat? Are they out there eating mostly bugs?
So again, it depends on the species, but like lizards that I work with, like, they eat like small insects.
Do they do the thing where they throw their tongue out, or no, is that just chameleons?
No. Okay. I'm not sure if it's just chameleons.
Is a chameleon a lizard?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Just for one of those where I was like, I don't know, it's got these foldable toes, you know? It's like, its toes are like a pita pocket. I was like, I don't know, man. Maybe it's not even a lizard.
Yeah, no, it's totally a lizard.
It seems like a souped up lizard because it's like curly tail, yes. Weird toes, yes. I change colors and I have a telescopic tongue. Like, it's got cone eyes. Yeah. Why did a chameleon get all these features?
Got lucky.
I guess, man. Okay, side note. I tried to research this and types of lizard tongues was turning up relatively little. Then I tried to get fancier, searching for lingual morphology in lizard species, and I found this paper, Evolution and Function of Lingual Shape in Lizards, with Emphasis on Elongation, Extensibility, and Chemical Sampling. But that was more about sniffing. More on that later. So then I went on a chameleon deep dive, and I had to hold on to my butt for the info that came next. So, number one, chameleons' tongues can be up to twice the length of their bodies, and they're made of bone and tendon and elastic tissue, folded like an accordion. And then they stretch it back like a bow, and then they flick that thing out, accelerating. You ready for this? Car buff people? From 0 to 60 in 1/100th of a second. There are over 200 species of chameleons, and there are some that are so teeny, teeny, tiny that they can sit on the tip of a match, which I hope they only do for Nat Geo photo ops. Because imagine sitting on a giant ball of highly flammable explosives, just so people could get an idea of like how much you weigh. Nightmares on nightmares. Okay, but to summarize, these little buddies are native to Africa, Madagascar, Sri Lanka, Southern Europe, and they have prehensile curly tails that can grab stuff. They have swivelly eyes with cone-shaped lids that can move independently from each other, and they can switch from monocular to binocular vision when they need it. They can change their skin color by moving the spaces between pigment crystals under their skin. Certain chameleons have bones that glow under UV light, and yes, their toes face each other. And this is called zygodactyl, in case you're ever playing Scrabble and you have a Z and 2 Ys. I thought, damn, these lizards must be the newest models on the market. But they've identified species around 60 million years old. They may be up to 100 million years old. So they have some special features. But how do other lizards eat? Do they just order pizzas and give up on life?
So a lot of times, some lizards, they kind of like are sit and wait predators. So they'll just like, I see you, run up, and then go back to where they were perched.
Mm-hmm. So they'll just use locomotion to go in and catch a fly or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh. And now, do you have to see if their diet's changing year to year? Like if there's different insects or they're hungrier one year than another?
So I was looking at if they were eating emerging aquatic insects out of streams, because no one has actually looked at whether like their food sources are purely terrestrial or if there are any aquatic ones. And so because of, you know, climate change and stream drying and drought and all that, I was like, well, if they're eating these aquatic insects and they're important, then, you know, they could be negatively impacted when these streams go away.
So how does she figure out what wild lizards are eating? Well, she sequences their poop. They're not using it anymore. Okay, she might as well. She figured this is the same technique they use with lions and tigers and bears. Oh my.
So we were in the middle of talking about poop and I got distracted by something on my porch. I'm so sorry. There's a lizard on the pole.
Okay. See that pole? I swear I didn't hallucinate, but there was a big Western fence lizard on that pole.
I believe you.
It went on the other side.
Okay. I believe you 100%.
I got so excited and it ducked out of view. It was there though. It was taunting us. So you figure if you can do it with big cats,
why not? Like people have like the DNA sequences of, you know, aquatic insects. So if they have it and then I have the poop and then the DNA is going to be in the poop.
Boom.
It only makes sense.
Do you think you're the first person to analyze lizard poop?
Probably not.
What's the most beautiful lizard?
The most beautiful lizard. Well, for me, it's going to have to like Slapper Sherevi, Yarrow Spiny Lizard has a very special place in my heart.
It really?
Will always be, you know, my favorite, the most beautiful to me. Yeah, because it was just like once that was like the main species that I worked with like during my undergrad. And so like for me, it's just like a symbol of like the world opening.
Mm-hmm.
Like I did it and like that was like my whole new world because I was like I didn't know that this was like a thing that I could do and now I do and you're now my special lizard.
Quick aside, so the Yarrow Spiny Lizard goes by Scelaporus yarrowi in formal occasions and it is quite a stunner. Their backs can have an orange glow kind of like an Edison bulb in a good first date bar. And its tail has this gray ombre that fades into this brilliant turquoise color. It's so gorgeous. It's the kind of blue you would see in pictures of like shallow tropical waters in Instagram vacation photos of a person that you hate follow. Erin explains.
What do they look like? So they are a medium-ish size lizard. The males get these nice blue patches on their stomachs and on the either side of their stomachs and on their throat. They can get like really like brilliant like orangish colors on their back and blue and like they're a little variable, but they're really pretty in especially in the sunlight.
Why do you think they have those blue patches? What does that serve? What purpose?
So mating. And to show, you know, who's boss, don't come over in my territory. I am the big bad male. You see how dark this blue is? You see it? You see it? Go away.
Really?
You're like, unless you're a female.
In which case, come closer.
Right.
Is there any truth to the flimflam that if you rub a lizard on its stomach, it'll get like so entranced you can just hang out with it for a minute? No?
I mean, once you catch it, it's just... I mean, sometimes they're going to like try to bite you and then some of them are just like, well, this is the end. I'm just going to sit here now.
They're like, you got me. Like, yeah, game over.
Pretty much.
But really, you just mark them and then let them go again, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of a happy ending, right?
Yeah, they're alive still.
They're alive.
Sometimes they might be missing a couple of toes, but.
And now you have a poodle. You don't have any pet lizards.
No.
Okay. What do you think about pet lizards?
As long as you know how to care for them and you do so properly and you are not getting any illegal pets or things that are bringing disease because you went through a person or a company that is just like, well, we're just going to grab up these lizards and send them around. So as long as you do it responsibly, then I don't see any issue with it.
So also don't get like a baby iguana and then let it loose in the backyard when it gets ugly.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because
like shelters do take lizards. You have an unconventional pet and you don't want it anymore and you're worried about getting rid of it. You can take it to the shelter. They'll take it.
They'll take your middle-aged scaly iguana.
Yeah.
I know. I do feel like everyone gets a baby iguana and then they're like, oh, God.
Right.
This thing's going to live forever right now. Like, yeah, live me.
P.S. Florida, you are overrun with iguanas right now. So the green iguana in particular has just flourished after folks who got them as pets in the 80s bailed and let them loose in the bushes. And then more hurricanes that we're having recently blew them over from some distant lands. And then also global warming just keeping Florida nice and toasty. So what is the problem with having 80 feral iguanas in your yard? I'm glad you asked. South Florida residents do not enjoy swimming pools fouled with iguana turds, which can also carry salmonella. Also, iguanas can grow to be 5 feet long. They love to eat gardens, and they also like to eat power lines, meaning sometimes there are power outages because iguanas have eaten the power lines. Sometimes they turn up in people's toilets. It sounds like an iguana party, but the state's not into it. So what is a Florida to do? Well, the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission released the directive a few months ago that people can and should kill them, quote, whenever possible. Did this lead to a Florida man iguana hunting but shooting his neighbor's pool guy on accident? Yes. Yes, it did. Non-fatally, but still. So the Fish Commish had to release another statement just a few weeks ago saying, kill them humanely, i.e. quickly, preferably with a bow and arrow or traps or a rock, and try not to shoot each other, essentially. Now, another option, eat them. Locals apparently refer to iguanas as pollos de arboles, or chicken of the trees. And historically, they're a menu item in Western Mexico. People eat iguanas all the time. So Sunshine Staters are like, why the hell not? Florida Sun Sentinel published a helpful video on how to cook and fashion these local pests into burritos. The meat is lean, the protein content's high, and reports are it has a body like a rabbit with a bony, fishy kind of tail. But tastes like chicken.
Is this chicken what I have, or is this fish?
What are some flimflammeries about lizards that you feel like myths that you would like to bust?
They're not slimy, for one. And for the most part, they're not going to hurt you. Like, they want to be left alone. Like, if you see a lizard, there's no need to be afraid. They're not scary.
Are there people who are afraid of lizards?
There are people. Mm-hmm. Like, I encounter lots of people who are afraid of lizards. And I get it. But then it's just like, but it's a lizard. It doesn't want to bother you. It just wants to eat the bugs.
Mind? I'm trying to eat here.
That seems like a great thing to have in your house. Like, right. If you find a lizard in your house, should you just let it hang out or should you escort it outside?
You should probably escort it outside because it might not be enough bugs in your house for it to live off of. It needs some water sources, and it probably got in there by accident. It probably was hanging out on the door and you opened the door and it got scared. And so like it just went inside by accident. It probably wants to go back outside.
Okay. So don't keep it as your like personal extermination service.
Yeah.
Okay. Good to know. I could see having just like a house gecko that you're like, go get it. Right. Get it. You know, there's a mosquito. Get it.
Let's talk about Aaron's viral Twitter game that runs on Wednesdays called hashtag find that lizard. So part of the reason we went lizard hunting is that I'm obsessed with find that lizard and I wanted to experience it with its creator. Boy, howdy. Was it a damn thrill.
I see him. He's just chilling out. I can't believe I didn't bring my phone to take a picture.
This would be a good find that lizard. He's playing with us.
I figured it would want to be in something like this because it's easy to have somewhere to hide, and it's also pretty decent to get some sun.
Yeah. You've made finding a lizard like seeing a celebrity in the grocery store. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you have you've taken over my Wednesdays.
Yeah.
With find that lizard.
Yeah.
Hashtag find that lizard. It's my favorite thing to do on the internet. You and Kaylee Swift's Crow or No. It's like Wednesdays are the best. Oh, and then Whose Poop Is This is also another fun game. But find that lizard. I like wait until it's 5 o'clock central time. It's going to go up. I know I've got a couple hours to find the lizard.
Yeah.
How did you start this and why has it taken over my brain?
So I just posted a picture one day because I was upset. Well, I wasn't upset. I was just, you know, energized. Like I was just, you know, really hot in the moment because I was trying to catch this lizard and she was giving me like a really good chase and she almost got away. And it's like, I was about to give up. And then I looked back. I was like, am I really going to give up on catching this lizard today? And then I saw it. I saw her and she was in this tree and I was like, I almost missed her. Her camouflage was so good, but she was a recapture. So she had this bright orange 5 on her back because I had already marked her. And so I was like, if it wasn't for this 5 on her back, I would have missed her. Look, guys. And then people were like, I know you said she has a mark, but I don't see her. And so I was like, really? And then people were just like, yeah, this is fun. I think it gets their competitive nature going.
Yeah.
Because they're just like, there's not a lizard in this photo. And I'm like, there is. And they're like, don't you touch that phone. Don't you take, I'm still looking for the lizard.
Do you have your phone on you? So when you're in the field,
you see a lizard, and before you advance on the lizard, you're like, I got to get a picture of this. No one's going to be able to see this lizard.
Yeah, I totally do that.
How many do you have in a backlog? Because I want to know that, like, we're covered for a long time with this. 52 at least, please. You go week to week.
Sometimes I do. Yeah.
That's how I make this podcast.
It's pretty much, it's just like, well, if I'm in the space and I can get a bunch of pictures, I will. Like there has to be some, cause like I recently had to upgrade my storage with iCloud because they're like, yeah, you have too many pictures. Like, well, I'm not deleting anything right now cause I don't know if I have any good ones in here. But I also probably have thousands of pictures with no lizards in them.
Is that because you thought you saw a lizard?
Or like I was about to, like I pressed the button, but as soon as I pressed the button, it moves. Or it ran away, you know. So like I spend a lot of time going through pictures looking for lizards that aren't there.
But that's what I love about the game is you at first glance, you're like, there's absolutely no way that there's a lizard in this. And then when you find the lizard, it's such a triumph. Yeah. And then it makes you appreciate the lizard and how much evolution went into that kind of camouflage.
Yeah.
Do you feel like hashtag find that lizard has gotten people more stoked about lizards?
Yeah. Like people have told me that it's made them like more interested in lizards and made them think that it's cool. And I'm just like, yes, lizards are cool. Yes, lizards are cool.
What is it about kind of the predator-prey relationship where they're so hard to spot, but you have to listen for the rustle or you have to see this little flicker of movement? Like, are they prey for a lot of animals?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're prey for pretty much everything bigger than them, even like other lizards.
Oh, no.
Like, lizards will eat lizards, snakes will eat lizards, small mammals will eat lizards, large mammals will eat lizards.
Really?
Birds are eating the lizards. Everything eats lizards. So they have to play for the long game.
They're kind of the sandwich of the natural world.
Pretty
like,
much.
You know, everyone's like, yeah, I'll take a lizard. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
My undergrad advisor calls baby lizards ecological popcorn because everybody just, you know, snaps them up. Just, a handful at a time.
Now, where are lizards having their babies? Because I'm picturing the desert and or like rocky ground. And mm-hmm. Are they having clutches, nests?
So, it depends on the species.
Okay.
So, some lizards are live bearers, so they'll just, pick a spot and pop them out. And then other lizards, they lay eggs. And so then the vast majority of lizards lay eggs, but some of them give live birth. But, so they'll, Scopus frigatus, the striped plateau lizard, will wait until like it rains and when the ground is nice and soft, and they'll go out and they'll dig and then they'll bury their eggs and cover them up. And then, sometimes when you're walking along the trail and you see all these like scratch marks, it's because something came by and ate the eggs. Oh. And they dug them up.
Oh no, that's like ecological jelly beans. Yeah. I know it's going to depend on the species, but do some lizards have like two eggs and some are just like, oh, I got like 50 babies in here?
I can only really speak for the ones that I study. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of times they're popping out a lot of them.
Yeah, because they have to survive the numbers
mm-hmm.
game.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk big lizards who can regulate temperature more slowly because of their mass to surface area ratio. And for more on that, get all into body heat fun facts with anole researcher and thermophysiologist Dr. Shane Campbell-Staton in the previous thermophysiology episode. He's amazing. Stupidest question. Alligators. They are lizards.
No.
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 Thank you for telling me that. I just realized, I was like, how big does a lizard get? Why isn't an alligator a lizard? I'm sorry.
They're but just not.
Is a Komodo dragon maybe the biggest? Is a Komodo dragon a lizard?
I think they are the biggest. Yeah, they are lizards.
And when you see those videos of them like slow motion eating a deer,
right?
You're like what is life? Komodo dragons, by the by, hail from the Indonesian islands and can get up to 10 feet long and weigh 150 pounds. And we'll touch on them a little later, but I don't mean that literally because there were none in my backyard and no thank you. I don't want to lay any hands on any one of those. No way, no how. Side note, I just looked it up and there is a place in Jakarta where, according to TripAdvisor user Goldie6 from Ohio, quote, the Komodo dragon building was gorgeous. And for a little extra, you can touch a live but well-fed Komodo dragon for the thrill of a lifetime. Goldie6, You're from America. Isn't life here thrillingly scary enough? Anyway, we're going to get to your Patreon questions. But before that, a few words about sponsors I like, who make it possible each week to donate to a cause of the ologist's choosing. And this week, Erin picked the Doris Duke Conservation Scholars Program, or DDCSP, which is a highly selective two-year undergraduate research program focused on preparing the next generation of diverse environmental conservation professionals. And it offers immersive, experiential learning opportunities, and access to mentorship opportunities. So for more information, you can visit DorisDukeConservationScholars.org. Now, some words about the sponsors who are making that donation possible. Ologies with Allie Ward is sponsored by Claritin. So luckily for those that live with the symptoms of allergies, you can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. This is designed for serious allergy sufferers, and Claritin D has two powerful ingredients and just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. It's this double action combination of prescription, strength allergy medicine, and the best decongestant available. Relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. Just boom, down the hatch. You can get non-drowsy relief of allergy symptoms. And with Claritin D, you can still make the most of your day without compromise or looking like you've been crying. Are you ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Your pod mother, Jarrett, terrible allergies and was recently shooting an indie movie that was filming in a house that had 7 cats. Guess who's allergic to cats? Him. So yeah, we always have Claritin in like each of our cars. Essentially, Claritin D is the third in our relationship. It's fast and powerful relief. It's just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Listen, we're all carrying around just a backpack of stressors and sadnesses. When we keep them all zipped up and the load gets heavier, it can start to affect us negatively. You start to feel misunderstood, sad, resentful. A safe place to unpack that is, you guessed it, therapy. Therapists can help you dump out your bag and work through the heavy garbage that's weighing you down, in my case at least. I've used BetterHelp. They have definitely helped me understand that pushing my feelings down does not actually make them go away. It makes them feel worse. So if you've been thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient and flexible. It's suited to your schedule. You fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. It's so much faster and easier than trying to hunt down a therapist from just online listings and cold calling. That's one thing I love about BetterHelp. And if for any reason you're not vibing with your therapist, you can switch anytime, no additional charge, no drama. So unburden yourself and trauma dump onto someone who's trained for this. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ologies today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ologies. Oh, KiwiCo. We love you. Kids love you. Parents love you. Uncle Allie's love you. Here's the deal. So whether you're staying at home or you're heading out on some summer explorations, KiwiCo is inviting kids, also kids at heart, that's you, to enjoy their first ever summer adventure series. So kids from 2 years old to teens can receive 6 hands-on science and art project kits over 6 weeks. They have something for everyone. They have different topics for each age, whether your kid wants to explore space or learn about dinosaurs. And I've heard from my parental friends that summer can be a little challenging to keep the kiddos busy. KiwiCo's like, we did the legwork for you. And the summer adventure series is this personalized experience with super fun activities like a bottle rocket kit where kids can build an actual bottle rocket. And you can either receive all of your summer adventure crates at once or weekly for 6 weeks. I think it's so amazing that they have different crates for different ages, everything from the great outdoors that has like giant bubbles or a window garden to a trebuchet kit for ages 9 to 14, an entrepreneur where you can do textured clay projects. If you have kids, if you know kids, keep them occupied and learning and having fun this summer with KiwiCo. And you can get 20% off your summer adventure series at kiwico.com/ologies summer. That's 20% off your summer adventure at kiwico.com/ologies summer. Oh, have fun. Oh, it's heating up. It's time to say bye now to your jackets and your sweaters and your tights and get reacquainted with shorts and tees, breezy things. Can I point you to the direction of Quince? What I love about Quince, you can build a lineup of tights timeless pieces. They keep you looking effortlessly chic year after year without spending a fortune. They have premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts. They start at $30. They have washable silk tops. And I love that all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands because they partner directly with top factories. They cut out the cost of the middleman and then they pass the savings on to you. So whether you need a sundress you can wear to a picnic or you need some good t-shirts or tanks that feel nice on your skin and are well made, head over to Quince. I love them so much I put them on my body. That's what clothes are for. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/ologies for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/ologies to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/ologies. Okay, back to your questions.
I have some Patreon questions. May I ask you?
Yeah, okay. Let's get into it. Yeah.
Some people submitted several questions themselves. Like some people were like, I have 5 questions about lizards and I'm going to submit them all. Bethany Sispansky. A lot of Z's in that. Just saying.
Wow. Took me a minute.
Figure out how to say that. Okay. Says, I've read that Western fence lizard blood reduces the prevalence of Lyme disease. And is any research being done to create a vaccine based on this? Have you heard about?
So I have actually recently heard about Western fence lizards being able to help fight Lyme disease. I know absolutely nothing about it besides that is a real and actual thing.
Okay, side note. When Lyme-infected nymph ticks feed on Western fence lizards, a certain percentage become Lyme-free as adult ticks. And this was first discovered in 1998 by UC Berkeley entomologist Robert Lane. And a certain protein in these blessed, beautiful, blue-bellied babies' blood kills the Lyme spirochete bacteria. For more on this, you can see the acarology and disease ecology episodes, which were out a few months ago. And by see, I mean here. And in no time, you're going to be lovingly screaming at your loved ones to check their crevices. And you should check yours also. So don't eat a Western fence lizard. Right. Let them go out and do their work.
Exactly.
Jude Kenny wants to know, if a lizard loses its tail, does it grow back? If so, can this be made to happen in other animals by some kind of genetic engineering? And Crystal Mendoza says, this question, please ask this one. So who else wanted to know about lizard tails? Like all of you, because it's a good question. But by all of you, I mean specifically Andreas Ari, Richard Jentz, lizard lover and first-time question asker, Jennifer Alvarez, James Irvine, B. Wilson, Shannon Snyman, Carolina, and Peter Dupuy Jr. So what is it about the tail that's like, okay, I'll make another one?
I do not know the exact mechanisms that like tell the lizard's body to start regenerating a tail, but they totally can. The idea is that they have vertebrae along the tail and at certain sections, it will just break. And so that way it just pops off. And so that the tail will still be moving and hopefully it will distract whatever predator has grabbed the lizard. And then the lizard itself can run away. And I have no idea if people are looking into like using it for other things, like for people or whatnot. But I would assume that someone at some point has actually looked into this.
I wonder if you could just CRISPR yourself a tail. You're like, you know what I'd like? I'd like to just grow a tail today. Danielle Rivera wants to know, why are parthenogenic lizards so cool? Parentheses, they are so cool. So wants to know, can they just make more lizards without a mate?
Yes.
All the single ladies.
You know, sometimes when you don't meet men, it's just the cool thing. You know, sometimes you want things done and you want it done your way. And that means that nobody else is involved but you.
Maybe they're career lizards.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm not going to wait around. Exactly. Are they clones or are they a mashup?
They're clones.
They are.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I wonder if they're all named like Sharon, Shayna, Shara. I knew someone whose family was all named like Cheryl and Shannon, Shayna, like. Just name them all after right. You. You're like, see ya.
That's cool.
Does that happen when maybe there aren't resources or there aren't males? Or does that just happen because like time's right, now's good?
So I was looking this up for some whiptail species, especially the ones that you can find in southern Arizona. And It happens when one closely related species mates with another closely related species, and then the babies they produce ends up being parthenogenic.
I started reading some research papers on this, but I want to give hardcore props to the Wikipedia page titled Parthenogenesis in Squamata, which sounds like actual gibberish verbal coleslaw. But once you know parthenogenesis means literally virgin birth, aka all the single ladies, and squamata means snakes and lizards, squata means scale in Latin. So one species of snake, but 50 species of lizard, roughly, undergo obligate parthenogenesis. And that means that's the only way they do it. That's how they reproduce. And then there's an unknown number that mostly do it when there just aren't dudes around. And that's called facultative parthenogenesis. I think that is how you say it. Also, apparently busting out children solo can benefit reptiles if they, say, wash ashore on an island. They find themselves dudeless. And while the whiptail lizards are all clones of their mothers, and no males even exist, other virgin lizard births can happen as full clones of the mother or half clones if she mixes up her own DNA into different alleles. But what if they are of the clone variety?
Once they have the cloning ability, it's parthenogenic, you know, party.
A partha party?
Yeah.
Just all the guests look identical.
Right.
I would like to attend that lizardly clone party and just be a gawking wallflower. Speaking of clinging to walls, this next one about magic lizard feet was also asked by Sarah Clips. Patrick McNeely wants to know, how do lizards stick and climb on vertical surfaces so easily when they are relatively large? So I think these are some van der Waal forces, yeah. Right? How are they climbing things?
Well, some lizards, you know, they have their claws. They can just, you know, get up there with their claws. But then with things like geckos, they have like these little itty bitty things that allow them to like grip on, you know, the little bitty molecules. Like we feel like the solid wall, mm-hmm. whereas they would have like, oh, there's like these little indents on this solid wall and I can grip on them because I have all these little, I don't know exactly what they are, but I have all mm-hmm. these little things on my pads.
That's how those intermolecular forces are working. That's van der Waal.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's cool. I never understood that before. So I did a little digging, and apparently geckos' feet are covered in fine hairs called setae, and that each of those is frayed at the end like an old rope, giving their feet billions of little bristles called spatulae. So geckos' feet are just a fuzz factory. And the van der Waal's forces, a kind of physical bond via electrostatic attraction between those hairs and the little contours in the wall, keeps them looking glued to it. When the surface is super slick or those hairs get covered is when their wall walking starts to wane. And I read that a single gecko crawling on a ceiling could support 90 pounds of weight. And one biologist who studied how the precise angles of those hairs help the gecko switch the forces on and off, someone named Keller Autumn, is quoted as saying, geckos are vastly over-engineered. They're overqualified for their wall walking. They're too good at it. And somewhere there's a chameleon raising its eye cones like a bitch and muttering, yeah?
Yeah.
I guess an invisibility cloak isn't enough anymore. Also, I fear a dystopia where robots can climb walls and disappear into their surroundings and flick a wet, sticky muscle 30 feet to catch things. So for now, just make like a happy witch. Appreciate that you weren't born a cricket. Can you imagine? That would suck. This is a good question. Mark Turner asked, what's the purpose of the forked tongue?
So it is sensory. Again, back to surface area. Mm-hmm. But it's like, if you have like more space to have more of those things to collect scent chemicals on your tongue, and then you can like bring it back up to like, there's the little thing right here mm-hmm. in the face where they can put the tongue, and then it analyzes like the chemicals and lets them know things about the environment. There's a whole name for it, and I learned it in class and I just don't remember. I'm sorry, Dr. Kaprowski. You definitely explained it to me, but I remember what you were talking about.
This is what asides are for. Yeah. So this organ is called a vomeronasal organ, or a Jacobson's organ, which sounds less like vomiting and is easier to pronounce. A Jacobson's organ is there for lizards to jam their air samplings into the roof of their mouth so that they can figure out what's in the air. Don't you wish you had a vomeronasal organ? Don't worry, we do. Scientists just think it's hanging out and we don't really use it. But elephants use theirs, and so do a bunch of other animals. But we don't care about those other animals. We care about lizards. So it's kind of like putting a broom out there. Like the more bristles you have, the more information you can collect. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Christina Weaver wants to know, what makes a Komodo dragon's bite so terrible?
They have a big head with a whole lot of sharp teeth. Mm-hmm. And then they also have venom glands, and they will inject you with venom, and it's nasty stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
What is that? Is that to kind of paralyze prey or to stun it?
After a while, you will start to get paralyzed, but it basically starts breaking down your body from the inside.
Whoa, my God.
Yeah.
That's effective. Yeah. What are those big old drooly things that they've got? Is that drool, or do they have sensory organs? You know, sometimes you watch like a Komodo dragon in slow motion, and it's
it has just, like, stuff coming down.
Just like dingle dangles.
Yeah, that's drool.
Oh, nice. Oh, that drool is...
It stink.
Oh, real ripe. Is it? Is it stinky?
I would assume so.
Ooh.
Hopefully one day I'll get close enough to find out, you know, like close enough where it's like a cool thing, but not close enough where they're going to eat my face.
Maybe a sleepy one.
Yeah.
A sleeping dragon.
Yeah.
I mean, compared to a fire-breathing dragon, venom and drool isn't that bad.
Yeah.
You know? Quick aside on Komodo dragon drool. So for decades, it was thought that the bacteria in their mouths acted as a venom, and that was what was killing their prey. Before researchers realized, oh no, it's just actual venom they have. They even went so far as to swab and culture Komodo dragon mouths and found out that they're relatively clean for an animal that eats a bunch of rotting meat. So their teeth rip apart prey, and then their venom toxins lower the prey's blood pressure and prevent clotting so that their victims bleed out and then they eat their corpses. Now, water buffaloes, when injured though, they'll go hide, and usually in a pool of stagnant water. So why water buffaloes get such terrible infections from a Komodo dragon bite? Well, an expert in this, Brian Fry in Queensland, explained thusly. It's the same as if you dumped a whole bunch of cow dung in your pool during the peak heat of summer, shaved your legs with a very old razor, and then went and stood in the water for a day, says Fry. You'd end up with some very tasty infections. This just makes me want to hang out with more lizard researchers. And I would also like to hang out with YouTube uploaders Team Hazard Rides Again, who filmed a bunch of male Komodo dragons mercilessly slapping each other in the face with their huge tails. Each lizard is reeling like it had just had a skinny margarita tossed in its face on a yacht. But please enjoy their wonderful, delicate moment in dad punnery.
Oh, sorry.
Whoa.
Knock down, drag it down, fight.
Hey, but not one of these.
Knock out.
Knockdown, dragon fight? Is that what you were going for?
Christopher Rougeau wants to know, deadliest lizard?
I guess as far as venom and stuff goes, like Komodo dragons, but then it's also like either the Asian monitor or the Nile monitor. It's between one of those two who are like the most aggressive. Mm. I think that those are the ones where they've seen the most death. One of those two that they've seen the most deaths with. And that's just like people getting, you know, too close and harassing the wild, like leave the lizard alone.
Do they want? Do they want a selfie with the lizard?
Maybe.
Can you eat those big lizards?
I mean, I'm sure you can eat just about everything.
Well, that's
if you really wanted to. I wouldn't. If I was stuck and stranded somewhere, I might eat a lizard.
I mean,
if it's between me and the lizard, I love you, but I'm sorry.
If you're naked and afraid enough, it seems like anyone will eat a lizard. Charlotte Rodriguez wants to know, why do lizards insist on having babies in my ivy plants? Are they going to eat my plants?
Probably not. It's probably just a safe space for them where they're just like, I can get around here and then I can hide from stuff. And like, you might have some little aphids or something that fits in baby lizards' mouths. And they're just like, this is a perfect place to have my babies. They can hide and they have food.
So, Charlotte, just, you should be proud that you're such a good host.
Yeah.
You know?
Pretty much.
Make yourself at home in my ivy. I left some aphids out in case you and the kids are hungry. James Irvine says, so many questions, many O's, 9 O's. Is it painful when they drop a tail?
I don't know if it's painful like the way that we think about pain. I mean, I couldn't even imagine what that would feel like if I had the ability to just, like, let one of my limbs go.
I know.
Like, you know, I would feel like it probably would be sore, but I feel like it wouldn't be a whole lot of pain if it's, like, one of those things where it's, like, this is what it's supposed to do.
Mm, right.
You know what I mean?
Like, if you've evolved the ability to drop your tail, chances are you've also evolved not a whole lot of really raw nerve endings there, maybe?
Exactly. One of the main points of it is to escape predators and survive. Then it doesn't make that much sense to drop the tail and then to have that process caused so much trauma that, you know, it impacts your survival later on. Of course, it's going to, like, be negatively impacted by having to heal it, regrow it, and then not have, like, as strong as a tail as it did before. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's just, like, it should be not painful, so painful that you can't keep on living as a lizard who's dropped his tail.
Good point. Side note, I did some digging, and yes, all experts seem to agree that it doesn't hurt. But can you imagine if you got in a fight with someone and as a distraction, you just dropped your butt at their feet and then ran and it didn't even hurt? Another reason why lizards deserve you stopping and physically saluting them when you see them. Like me with a migraine, I couldn't fight anyone. And also, James Irvine wants to know, what's with the whole eye blood shooting? Can we talk about horned lizards?
But my undergrad advisor, George Menendorf, was one of the people who, like, did the experiments with them and, like, wrote that up. And so it's basically they're bursting a blood vessel in their eye to, like, shoot the blood and hopefully, you know, get away.
And that's just to terrify the shit out of whatever's trying to eat them?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's and so metal. And then it
might also be, like, a little nasty.
It is super nasty. It's so hardcore death metal, though, where it's, like, instead of just dropping a tail or, I don't know, like having a fan behind their head that comes out, they just burst their own blood vessels and shoot it at someone.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so respectable. I love that so much. Just Google horned lizard shooting blood from its eyes if you don't believe me. Again, salute the lizards. Jennifer Alvarez wants to know, do anoles raise their young or stay in packs? I saw a dad anole with a much smaller kid anole the other day and wondered.
As far as I know, they don't raise their young. It might have just been that they were occupying the same space at the same time, which lizards do sometimes. Mm-hmm. So if it's like a lot of times lizards do get pretty aggressive and territorial, but other times you might see a couple right next to each other, especially if it's like early in the morning and everybody's just waking up and everybody has to warm up and no one has the energy to fight just yet and that type of thing.
Where are these lizards sleeping? Are there bunk beds full of lizards?
So, yes and no.
Okay.
So, like, during, like, the regular season, so, like, you're in the winter is ending, spring is coming out, and, like, you have a hibernacula, and in this hibernacula is, like, hundreds of lizards. And so then, like, it starts to get warm, and everybody's, like, we're coming out, and we're spreading out. And, like, the big, you know, dominant lizards are staying the closest to the hibernacula, and everybody else is having to go further and further away in order to find their own territories. And then they find crevices or something to have their own little houses or whatnot. And then, like, for anoles, stuff that live in trees, then it's just like, well, we got to share this tree. And this is my spot on the tree, and you better go to your spot on the tree. And
are they overwintering? Are they hibernating?
Mm-hmm. Anoles, yeah, they will.
Oh,
they do.
Do most lizards hibernate?
Yes.
Really? So they start to come out like in the spring then, maybe? Oh my gosh, I love.
Yeah. Like in Tucson, their period is shorter because like it's a shorter period of like really cold weather. So like you'll see them all the way up until like December and then they'll go away for a while and then they'll come back out in like the end of February, beginning of March.
Oh, I love that when we're in the middle of holiday nuttiness and we're having warm cocoa and wearing mittens just to think of all of these little lizards just snoozing
right
just, like in a big hibernacula just a big ball of lizards
right pretty much
see in a couple months. Brandon Altimos wants to know, does parthenogenesis make a species more susceptible to pathogens and other diseases due to reduced genetic variability compared to sexual reproduction?
Yes, because if everybody's the same and then the same thing is killing everybody, then, you know, there's nothing to protect you from.
Yep, you're all going down with the ship.
You're like, thanks, mom.
Right.
And she's like, oh, I know, right? But, oh, poor girl. Katie Chavez wants to know, which lizards make the best pets?
I have zero knowledge about the pet trade when it comes to lizards.
I'll ask the internet. I love you all, and I did not want to leave you gazing out of a bus window thinking, but what is the best pet lizard? So I asked the internet, and one site said that the leopard gecko is probably the most popular pet reptile in captivity today. They say these small lizards are available in a variety of pleasing colors and patterns. Their care requirements are very simple, and they are generally docile. Now, where did I get this information about best pet lizards, you ask? Well, at bestpetlizard.com. So I'm going to reckon they must be either an authority on the matter or they are just very crafty, deceitful gecko lobbyists. But Katie Chavez, another patron, Sarah Clips, did chime in on the question thread and added, crested geckos forever, with 5 hard-eyed emojis. And I think that lends a certain impassioned authority to her counsel, which brings us to a semantics. Amanda Rincon wants to know, hello, what are the differences between lizards and geckos? Not all succulents are cacti, but all cacti are succulents.
Yes.
So in this, the cacti is the gecko. Okay. Kind of like toads or frogs.
Yeah. I guess you have like different families of lizards. So then, yeah, that works.
It's all under the lizard umbrella.
Right.
Renee Coley asks, I had a green iguana for a while and she laid one clutch of eggs while I had her. But she ate them.
Well, I would, off the top of my head, I would just assume that she knows that they weren't fertilized. And so I was like, well, that's energy I put out. Guess it's energy I'm putting back in. Instead of just letting them sit there and rot.
God. Oh, thank God women don't have to do that once a month.
Right.
You're like, I made it. I'm going to use it.
Yeah.
Last Patreon question. Megan McLean says, are there poisonous, venomous lizards besides the Komodo dragon?
So there are other venomous lizards. So you have the Mexican beaded lizard and then you have the Gila monster.
The Gila monster is venomous?
Mm-hmm.
Why do the Gila monster has such beady skin? You know what I mean?
To let you know that it's venomous. Don't really? Mess with me. I am a very like interestingly brightly colored thing. And I am slow moving and I don't want to be bothered. But if you bother me, you can have the smoke. It is all for you if you want it.
Really?
But I'm telling you, you don't.
What happens with their venom?
So it's not like that bad for people, like for like small mammals and stuff. When they eat it, it's just like, oh, I guess I'm dying now. But like for people, it's more of like their jaws. Cause like when they clamp down on you, like that's it. If it's on your wrist, this is your new watch. So like don't mess with them because they'll clamp down and they won't let go.
How do you get a Gila monster off of you?
The hospital.
Yeah.
Professional help.
Yes, you do need a professional at that point.
And you love Gila monsters.
I want to see one in the wild so badly. It just has not happened.
Where do you go to look?
So people have been telling me to go to like Bear Canyon and Sabino Canyon, and I've been going and like I haven't seen anything yet. Although I might have seen a mountain lion, I'm not sure. Might have gotten almost eaten by it. I'm not 100% sure. Mm-hmm. And so like we were walking from the parking lot to the trails and we didn't even make it to an actual trail yet. And then I was just like, that looks interesting. Are those eyes? And they're like kind of high up and like they're forward facing. And I was just like, do you see that? And like, she was like, nah, let's go.
No.
And so like, we just turned around and left. At that point, we weren't even looking for Gila monsters anymore. We were just like, let's just walk around. Cause she's never done it before. And I was, cause like I'm the friend who like drags my friends to go do new experiences.
And what would you do if you saw a Gila monster in the wild?
I'd probably cry. I'd be so happy. Just happy tears.
Where do they hang out in the wild? Under rocks, around rocks?
Underground for the vast majority of the year. People have been telling me too, is that everybody who's seen one this year has been telling me that they've been seeing them on the roads, like just crossing the road.
And really?
I never see it when I'm driving along the road.
Erin says that between the 2 summers she spent as an undergrad in Arizona plus 3 years in grad school, she has wanted to see a Gila monster for 5 years. 5 years. I'm going to cross my fingers that there's a Gila out there that you get to spot and you have a moment with it that doesn't involve the hospital.
Same. Yes. You know, to have a safe distance with wildlife is totally cool to go out looking for it and finding it, but safe distances, y'all. Like,
oh, God. And now that would be a good and a bad thing, but what is the worst thing about your job? What's what sucks? Something's gotta suck.
I guess, like, you know, once you're in the field for like 4 weeks at a time and you still got, you know, another 2 weeks to go, you're like, okay, I'm tired of this now. I'm ready to be home.
Do you travel a lot for field work?
And the Chiricahuas are about 2.5-3 hours away from Tucson. Mm-hmm. So like once I'm out there, I'm out there, mm-hmm. and I'm not coming back until the season is over.
And when is that season usually like?
So it varies. For lizard people, it can be anywhere from like May through September, but I'm going in July.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Which brings me to another question. Is there such a thing as a shape-shifting lizard person?
I wouldn't know because it changed its shape so that it could, you know, conceal itself from me. But I'm not going to say no. You never know.
You guys don't ever have to do field work with the Illuminati to see if there's shape-shifting lizard aliens. No. You're like, I got one.
Oh, I wish. That would be cool.
What is the best thing about lizards or your job?
The best thing. For me, it's just being able to, like, handle these animals without causing them, like, a whole lot of stress. And then I'm like, oh, I can see you. I can learn more about you. I also have like the opportunity to take undergrad students out with me through the Doris Duke program, Conservation Scholars program. And so I get to teach them about lizards and they get to do their own like mini projects. And like, it's a lot of fun being able to just go out with them and, you know, learn together and explore together. That's pretty fun.
Any advice for people who want to be serologists?
I would say to, you know, get out there and find a mentor. I think that's what's really been good for me. I've been lucky enough to have two really great mentors. So George for undergrad and Michael Bogan for grad school have both been like phenomenal. And once you have an interest, just finding those people who would really support you. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like that's key. Like once you have those people who will have your back, then you're set. Of course, you're going to like run into hardships, but they'll help you, you know, get over those obstacles.
Yeah, that's great. I've heard that before, that a lot of people who are really successful really recommend finding a mentor. And a lot of people are too afraid to ask, but
yeah.
They don't realize that mentors do want to help. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm sure that you're a mentor to other people already, yeah. And you will probably continue to be.
Yeah. And I mean, also like, I get being too afraid to ask because like I'm definitely one of those people where it's like I have to prepare myself for like talking to new people and meeting new people and like because like I have like, you know, that social anxiety. I'm just like, oh, what if I'm weird? I'm walking weird right now. My tongue isn't working quite right. There's spit coming down my face. Oh my goodness, the spit. Like, and so it's like there's definitely like a whole lot of practice there. And then you also have to like get over that fear of people telling you no, mm-hmm. because like, you know, if you ask enough people, somebody's going to say yes. And hopefully it's one of the people who you actually want. And then, you know, you'll take good opportunities as they come. You don't have to take all opportunities because, you know, not all opportunities are good opportunities or like the right ones for you. But definitely just like not being afraid to go after what you want and then just being like, okay, this is what I want. These are the things I have to do to get there. This person told me no, but this person over here might say yes. And sometimes when people tell you no, it's not because they don't like you or because they don't believe in you. They might not have time. And so then it's just like, okay, this person said no. Hey, I know you said no, but can you have some other resource? Like, can I have some other resources from you? Like, do you know somebody who you can put me in contact with? Or, you know, who should I go talk to next? Or like, what direction should I go in? And like, a lot of the times people will be like, okay, well, yeah, I said no, but here are these other things. I got you for that. And sometimes people are just mean and you just have to write that off. Like,
but that's good life advice for any job.
Yeah.
All of that is like such solid life advice you could use if you are a clothing designer or, you know, if you, any aspiration you have, that is such solid advice that is so good to hear. Mm-hmm. If you just have that kind of resilience, which I think science fosters a lot of resilience, because there's a lot of resilience in data and experiments. And now, what about parting piece of advice? How do you find that lizard? If you are playing Find That Lizard, any strategies, or is it just attentiveness?
So, like, real life or the game?
The game.
The game. Turn your brightness all the way up. And then have, like, a strategy. Like for me, like, when I'm like, I need to find a picture for this game today, and I don't know where this lizard is in it, and if it's in my phone, there's a 50% chance that there's a lizard here. So I turn my brightness all the way up, and then I start at one quarter, and I go down, and then I go over a little bit, and then I go back up, and then I go over a little bit, go back down, and I'm just, like, scanning the picture until, like, I find it, and then sometimes I'm just like, well, maybe next time.
I love that sometimes you have to find the lizard before we can find the lizard. Yes, I definitely do.
That's how I know that there's, like, always a lizard in the photo, because I spend a long time looking through these photos to make sure that there's actually one in there.
You're like, I'm not only the master of this, I'm also a player.
Yes.
And where can people find you?
So they can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @Afro_Herper. Mm-hmm. So AFRO_HERPER.
Per usual, there will be links in the show notes and also up on my website at allieward.com/ologies/serology. And also, get the frick ready for Find That Lizard on Wednesdays. And I just found out that Erin has a Patreon set up at patreon.com/findthatlizard in case you'd like to support these efforts.
You're going to have a lot of new players.
Yeah.
So exciting.
I hope so. I hope you guys like it.
Thank you for having me. It's been great. It was so much fun. I was so nervous and, like,
no reason to be nervous. You're the best. You're my favorite serologist, literally.
Thank you.
So ask smart serologists stupid questions and salute the lizards. Salute the lizards. Again, more links are up at allieward.com/serology. And we are at Ologies on Instagram and on Twitter. Come say hi there. I'm at Allie Ward with one L on both. Ologies merch is available at ologiesmerch.com. Thank you, Bonnie Dutch and Shannon Feltis, who host the brand new comedy podcast, You Are That, for helping with merch. You can post your photos and tag them Ologies Merch so we can repost you on Instagram on Merch Mondays. And thank you, Aaron Talbert and Hannah Lippo, who admin the Ologies Podcast Facebook group full of nice people. And thanks to whoever started the Ologies Podcast subreddit to chat about episodes. Thanks to Jarrett Sleeper of the mental health podcast, My Good Bad Brain, for editing assistance. And also big thanks to the mustachioed chameleon of the podcasting world, host of the Purrcast and See Jurassic Right, Stephen Ray Morris, for editing this all together each week. Could not do it without you. Nick Thorburn wrote and performed the theme music. And if you listen to the end of the episode each week, you know, I tell you a secret. I learned the hard way that if you get something shipped to you in, like, a big box, you open that outside, because sometimes there's a thirsty warehouse cockroach waiting in the box. And I don't want to talk about it ever, 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 ever. Bye-bye.
Pachydermatology, homeology, cryptozoology, lithology, nanotechnology, meteorology, olfactology, nephology, seriology, selenology.
The lizards are $100 each. The parrot is $500.
That's a hell of a good parrot. Although, I could get 500 lizards for the same price. Girls like swarms of lizards, right?